Hello and welcome to the Table Talk Podcast. Tonight we're going to be talking about death and consequences in games. I'm John Jones, at John Solo on Twitter. I'm a longtime role player, currently based in the USA. I'm joined by Ben.
Hello, I'm Ben. I'm a UK role player and board gamer, now currently living down under.
And Grant.
Hello, I'm Grant. I'm a UK board gamer and role player, currently living down under, but in a different city from Ben, just to keep things exciting.
And last but not least, Will.
Hello, I'm Will. I am at Dark Wedge on Twitter. I run a group of role players in London in the UK.
So, as I slightly spoilerishly said at the beginning, we're talking about death and consequences.
I don't think it's a spoiler if you just...
No, it's not a spoiler.
Episode, John, that's okay.
They are going to, like, they're about to listen to us talk about death, and probably at some length. I think it's okay.
I was hoping you'd put it in the episode description. I'm not sure what you... Anyway.
That may be
that's
the
true,
title.
Yes, I killed the surprise.
Many things may have spoiled it before you.
So, Grant, in the pre-show we talked about, you had some games, and what were we going to start?
I'm heavy with games, like Spider might be heavy with eggs, and I'm willing to talk about them on the internet.
Beautiful.
While I push them forth from my game sphincter. Ready yourselves, gentlemen. Ready your conversation. I'm going to stop this. But the biggest game, which was the first game that came to mind when the topic was death, was Paranoia. Which is... Congratulations for having not heard about Paranoia, despite listening to a very niche podcast about role-playing games. Paranoia is it's set in a, I'd say, dystopian/utopian future world in an underground city called Alpha Complex, and you play troubleshooters who are tasked by the computer, capital T, capital C, to go and solve problems, to go and shoot trouble, basically. And you die. You die over and over, and you have six clones of your character who can get decanted and thrown back into the situation to try and keep the action up. And it's a strange thing. And like the book itself admits that it doesn't make any sense. Like no part of the game makes sense in Paranoia. And the book says, you know, the only reason that we have these clones is so you can kill players. And there's really no need to explain why you have them. But from what I've seen, having played a few games recently, the ethos behind Paranoia seems to be really close to the ethos behind Itchy and Scratchy. And that it's really funny to watch people die in messy ways, as long as the tone of the game is right. Similarly, and I know Will's played Goblin Quest, which is my own game.
I have.
Which is very,
I really
it's
like
very
Goblin
similar.
Quest.
It's a thank you. Kickstarting it soon, gents. We're very close to. It's very close to Paranoia in that you play five goblins in a row and they die in hilarious circumstances. But the other goblins are just hanging about off screen stealing people's shoes, and then they turn up on camera.
They're different. Your goblins, you're encouraged by the game to make them different and to have, you know, one or two sort of special defining features. Whereas with Paranoia, when your character dies, literally, it's like they come back into the room almost immediately afterwards, and everyone's just like, hey, you know.
How you doing?
There's no need to give them any information. There's no nothing like that at all, which is just as well, because
it's unlikely you had any information at that point anyway.
Well, quite possibly.
Or would you give it to them? Yeah.
And I mean, in Paranoia, I mean, say you've got exactly the same clone with exactly the same illegal mutant power, of course, which is more of a convenience for not having to re-roll a new character. But I mean, it's definitely gone through the evolutions that the original one, certainly death is kind of funny and you want people to die a few times. And, because death isn't, of course, the end in this. It's just a hilarious thing that you did to somebody. I think it then went a little bit slapstick in later editions. They kind of dialed up the death quite heavily and it just got to the kind of like Looney Tunes, falling anvil piano type death.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of went, oh, it's got a bit too silly. So then there was a big reaction when Mongoose republished it. They're like, right, we're going to make it serious. We're actually going to make it quite dark and gritty and 1984-y, and actually death's going to become a bit serious, and you can get money and you can buy new clones with money and may kind of turn it into, you know, death as a slight commodity and a slight consequence. And then everyone went, that's not much fun either. So I don't know, I think late edition they finally managed to get that balance back again between Looney Tunes, and actually I'm a bit upset that I got killed twice this session.
It's tricky, I guess. Like I think in Paranoia, like the actual punishment for death is that your immediate plans fail. Right. That's the thing. Like you're taken out of the game for X minutes while your new clone's delivered. I've been putting them in lifts. That's how I do it. Like there's a lift descending through multiple layers. And it's all very calm, and then it crashes through the ceiling into the middle of whatever fight you're on. And while the core idea of Paranoia is that you have these schemes that are going ahead. You're trying to achieve goals for your secret society or for your own secret goals. And if you're dead, then you can't sneak around behind people's backs. I think that's really the punishment in that you get taken out of the game for 5 minutes and then other people can arrange your corpse in a hilarious position. That's pretty much the punishment they've got.
Yeah, and I mean, as an aside, there was in the 90s, I think, or early 80s, even though Toon, the cartoon role-playing game, and it exactly was the rule. If you died in Toon, 3 minutes, you're out. You literally start the timer, and then you're a la classic cartoon, your character just reappears in frame, no explanation needed. Didn't he just get crushed to death by an anvil? Yeah, but he got better.
But would you say that these are kind of unusual examples, like not... In most role-playing games, that this isn't... These... They don't have this sort of conceit where you can just easily reappear, and so these are good examples of how to handle death, I think, in an interesting way. But
it's interesting you say that because in most role playing games, I think you're playing with your group, and there will always be. I mean, occasionally, you know, a character will die, and the player will leave with the character. But most often, they'll want to keep playing, and they'll just want to keep playing something else. So you sort of tend to have characters that fulfill whatever role the previous character had to an extent within the party.
Yeah.
Whether that's sort of a personality type thing, whether that's, you know, a role within, like, I mean, in Dungeons & Dragons, for example, if your cleric dies, you're going to want to have someone who can continue to heal you, whether it's a cleric or a druid or some other thing, you know.
Yeah.
But also, it's remarkably easy to bring people back to life.
Yeah, later levels absolutely is, and it kind of removes consequence. I'll say one of the almost shames of D&D is exactly what you just said, that people kind of feel obliged to bring the same character back, which sort of makes you feel like it's bad, therefore, to kill people, because the fun slightly diminishes, because you have to create a copy of the guy, and it would be better to keep playing. I still remember having Eric the Cleric version 5 appear, and I'm like, yeah, you could at least give him a different name, man. Just pretend it's a new character, even though I've
Beric seen the Cleric.
Exactly the same. Yeah, absolutely.
The only game that I kind of felt like it worked kind of well was we were playing Boot Hill ages ago, and, you know, a character died in a gunfight, and then a couple of sessions later the player came back with that character's brother, you know, or his cousin or something, who was out for revenge. It wasn't role played particularly well, but it was, you know, that was the circumstance where it kind of made sense that there was this guy showing up who looked kind of similar, you know, had the same last name, but you know, had slightly different goals, because he was out for revenge instead of whatever the first character was out for.
That turns death into a story lever, though, I suppose, rather than a story block, which I think is fun, and it gives you a reason to carry on telling the story. I've one thing as well I should mention, because I'm kickstarting Goblin Quest, I'm going to come up with some alternative story ideas with different games you can play using the system. And one of them is called My Name is Inigo Montoya Jr. And you play... you can guess what happens in that game. And so, it's a game where you play a school of five family sword masters who go out and keep avenging each other's deaths. I haven't really got the rules down perfectly yet, but I reckon it could be a lot of fun.
That's great.
Death is traditionally the ultimate threat in role-playing games. That's what we're all trying to avoid. That's what we're all trying to not have happen to our characters. And so much of almost every role-playing game is about the threat of physical damage, to the point where your character can no longer act ever again, where they're removed from the story. Yeah. And the ones which interest me generally more than the ones which interest me systemically are games when they understand that hit points are not just how much blood is in you. It's your story relevance and your story, your agency. And that's always very interesting. There's one which I'm actually going to segue into another game now off that. It's called Dead of Night, which is it's from, is it by Steam Engine? Engine Publishing. It's a horror movie RPG. It's a monster movie RPG. It's designed for, sorry?
No, go on. I think we lost.
It's, okay. It's a monster movie RPG. And you make a monster, you make some characters, and you try and survive against this horrible monster and try and solve whatever problem it's causing. But instead of hit points, you have survival points. And survival points represent anything from... They represent something going wrong when you spend one. And when you spend one, the GM gets more ammunition to make the world scarier. So rather than having, I have 10 hit points and 10 sanity points, you have 5 survival points. And they represent you going mad, you getting hurt, you getting lost, you losing equipment, you getting scared. Anything bad that can happen, which doesn't immediately kill you, is the loss of a survival point. And it's so thematically perfect that for getting you into the, oh, that was a close one, theme of horror movies. And that, yeah, that understands what hit points are and reframes them into an interesting place.
So that makes me kind of think of that Jenga-based game called Dread.
Oh, Dread, yeah.
Yeah.
Where, and I don't know, when the tower collapses, does someone die, or is it just like a majorly... massively horrible consequence.
So some major consequence happens which may involve death, I think.
Yeah.
And that seems like an interesting way to have tension in a game, you know, it's sort of this inevitable creeping doom that's, you know, going to befall your characters, which works so well in a lot of certain kinds of horror role-playing games, you know, like Cthulhu always seems to, the stories took that bent, so it seems like the game kind of should in some ways, but yeah, I don't know. But that's an interesting mechanic in Dead of Night. I don't know, where it sort of equates your life force with something else.
And something with and something that Dead of Night works on as well, because Dead of Night works as a very reactive thing. Like, the GM says, okay, this action is risky. Whoever loses, you or the monster, loses a survival point on this challenge. And similarly in Dread, the GM never rolls a dice, never does anything like that, but the second the tower falls over, it kicks off. And that's, I think that it's always tricky in GM'd games to have the threat of death as a serious problem, because it kind of involves the GM being a bit of a dick. And the more rules you can put in the way of that is great, because it distances the GM from that decision. So having Dredge as, listen guys, We're all out to tell a story. I want you guys to have a fun time. The second that falls over, I'm going to screw whoever pulled up the last Jenga block. That gives you a lot of license to be cruel. It basically gives you a, it's almost like a roulette wheel, as it were. It's not you picking on one player and saying, right, you're going to die. I don't like you. Your character's made some bad decisions. That doesn't matter.
It's, I think it also gives, fall over. It gives the players a controller or feeling of control over their destiny. I mean, obviously. No Jenga thing can stay up forever, but if you're good at Jenga, you know, in theory, you feel like you've got much more control over that than over the dice or something else, you know.
Yeah, I am so bad at Jenga, I would have to play the black person.
You just sort of swipe your arm at it and hope, or...
just hope it'll fall back up and it's like, no.
We should qualify, though, the black person in a Hollywood big-budget film, right?
I mean, because I die first, not because, yeah, wow, carry on.
But no, we know what you meant. Sorry. No, I think that's a really good point.
Oh, sorry, John. You know, okay.
go ahead, Ben.
Oh, no, I was only going to bring in, I mean, you mentioned rules getting between the GM and inevitable death. And no, I just brought up recently, I've been playing Fake Core, which kind of, I suppose, has... similar idea, but rather than having hit points and when they're gone, you're suddenly a dead person, they actually introduces sort of consequences as or inevitable ticking track towards death, which not only are your kind of hit point boxes in a way, but you also encourage to say, I haven't just got a mild wound, I've got a sprained arm, and haven't got a severe wound, I've got a fractured leg. And these are things that can be used and made into actually exciting narrative elements during the game. And furthermore, a player during a conflict at any point has a chance to say, you know what, I'm going to take myself out of this conflict. I'm going to submit, leave the combat. However, I'm going to get actually a pile of fate points for doing that, for helping the narrative be exciting by admit, yes, the enemy has bested me on this day. But in return, the contract is the GM will not kill you immediately. So the player absolutely is in control of his death to a reasonable degree, because he can say narratively, no, I'm just going to be bested in this fight.
I think that's an important thing which Fate gets, which a lot of games don't, which is normally in almost every kind of media, the heroes don't fight to the death. Like, they might fight to the death in the last scene, but they fight till they get beaten up. They fight till the villain takes the prize away. They fight until something goes wrong, and then they regroup and try again. And that's generally like the end of Act 2, is them regrouping and trying again. But in role-playing games, the options you have are kill everyone or die. I think it's really nice to have a role-playing game which takes a nod to that and says not every fight should be to the death, especially from the main characters. And introducing weaknesses other than, you've hit me so much, I have no blood left in me, and now I must die. Weaknesses other than that, and so having, well, I don't want to fight you anymore because I'm tired, or you've scared me off, or you managed to escape, or I got lost, are for me far more interesting and far more valid, far more interesting challenges to overcome than you hit me so much I fell over.
And getting captured and being put into an easily escapable prison is one of the tropes of good pulp gaming.
Precisely, yeah.
Indiana Jones always gets captured, but it always works to his advantage.
Yeah, you think that he'd just start off films like that, just going up to, yeah, I did some really bad stuff.
I'll surrender. Yeah. Take me in.
Really, but yeah. So can I just keep the whip for unrelated reasons?
Will, you were going to mention Risk Legacy. I don't know if that kind of fits into...
Yes, well... To do board games as well.
What was that, Will? Sorry.
And I'd quite like to do board games, yeah. So I think Risk Legacy is a very interesting game for a lot of reasons. I've talked about it, I think, in the past. And one of the reasons I like it is that in theory, you can eliminate players and, you know, you kind of get points at the end or rewards based on how well you did. You know, if you win, you get a big reward. If you sort of survive but don't get eliminated, you get a small reward, and if you're eliminated, you get no reward. So I think that's a good way of kind of dealing with the fact that most Risk games are sort of to the death.
I think.
And there's a the first time eliminated, it hasn't actually happened in my game yet. We've played five games now, and so far everyone's held on. I had a couple of close shaves, but. You get to open an envelope, and opening envelopes, which change the rules of the game or add new features or something like that, is probably the most exciting thing in Risk Legacy, apart from maybe writing your name on the board and one or two other bits and pieces. So there's one player in my game who is really keen to get that envelope open. Like, we've done a few of them now, a few of the envelopes, and he likes to get envelopes open, so he's out for blood in every game and starts fights and, you know, possibly starts fights with the intention of, you know, even losing them further along the way, just because that would also mean the envelope got opened. So, yeah, I think death as an incentive is an interesting idea and one that isn't really, you know, player elimination as incentive is sort of, it's used a bit in some board games, I suppose, but not well generally.
I believe Ben wanted to badmouth Mafia at this point.
No, a werewolf, but same game.
A werewolf, sorry, yeah. Because I'll join in.
Don't badmouth the Mafia. That will cause us problems.
briefly staying on Risk and I suppose classic family board games. Sort of back in the day, I guess Risk was the one you could be eliminated from. Like I said, it rarely happened generally, although you could be locked up in Australia, stuck there and have nowhere to go, and you're basically out of the game. And I sat in my youth through 2 or 3 hours of pointless Risk, where I may say, look, every go I'll add a guy there and you can beat me up, and I'll go and do something else, guys. where a lot of other family board games, they try to keep everyone in, but often in a slow and painful way. Queen Monopoly, again, grinding you down, but nobody goes out till the end. Which certainly in more modern games, no one goes out till the end is seen as one of the great features of Euro games. So Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, you're all in it till the end. No one's getting knocked out. Whereas on the other hand, we have Ameritrash board games where not always, actually fewer and fewer games have got the player elimination mechanic, but there are ones that still do. And it's still quite exciting, but then it's slightly annoying if it happens really early on in a game because you kind of look awkwardly at your friend who's now sitting there spectating. So therefore, you pray the game's quite short. So back to Mafia. Fortunately, Mafia / Werewolf does tend to be quite short in that if you're taken out, yeah, you might have to wait around 15, 20 minutes tops. And normally it... But unfortunately, it's player elimination in the first 2 minutes of a game, which is awful. It's terrible. I just sat down to play. You have to have it. It's mandatory. And occasionally, it's a brand new player because the werewolf person's also brand new and didn't know who's new to the group and who's been playing for years. Picks another new guy, and they're like, oh, that's a great game. And then has to get up and get a drink.
I suppose like Mafia traditionally played at parties. So it does give you something to do. You wouldn't all just, you might do, but generally you wouldn't just come over and play Mafia at someone's house. You do it as part of something else going on. However, one of the widely accepted rules in Mafia is that after you die, you can't talk. And that's fun. So not only are you knocked out in the first 2 minutes of the game completely arbitrarily, because someone has to die arbitrarily in Mafia, bad rule. Someone has to die arbitrarily. You then can't say anything to anyone for the next 20 minutes. And if that's your first experience at a party and you're like, oh, okay, this is awful. Why would you play this ever? And Mafia is a really fun way of lying to people, in a social setting, but there's a far better way of doing it, which is, the Resistance. Anyone's played that?
Yep.
Which is basically Mafia, but you get to keep playing, which is just really, really vital.
It has a similar mechanic, doesn't it? Where some people close their eyes, or I really need to play it.
it's the core idea is that there's a team of revolutionaries and there's a team of traitors, and each round you have a counter that passes around the table. Clockwise, and whoever has the counter picks a team to go out on a mission. And if the mission has all, when you get the mission, you can choose to either succeed or sabotage. And if the mission has all success, the mission succeeds. And if the mission has one sabotage, then the mission fails. And there's five missions, and whoever completes or sabotages the most missions at the end wins. But it's possible that, cause like, no one can find out who put the sabotage card in. That's all hidden. It's all quiet. So it's possible to be a saboteur and ruin everyone's mission all the time, but get away with it by grinning, and you can keep playing.
Very Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of a hidden role thing, yeah.
Which is another game that kind of tries to tackle that thing of death, you know. The Cylons, they can still, they're essentially out of the game once they've been revealed, but they're still doing stuff. They're not
completely, they get to play a different game, I think.
Yeah,
they're not completely
out of the game. They're...
And they get to ramp up the end game, which is normally quite an important feature. Being a traitor in Shadows over Camelot is a similar thing. You're kind of, it's fun when you're pretending you're one of the good knights at a round table, but when you get revealed, suddenly the fun goes down a little bit because you can't do much. But what you do is just overtly try and end the game at that point onwards and sort of turn the pressure up to 11.
Sort of like dodgeball, you're relegated to the sidelines, but you can still inhibit. I can't remember. I think you can still like throw the ball back or something. I don't know when it goes right, out of bounds or something.
As token American, you're the only one who can tell, say, authoritatively about dodgeball on this conversation. We've only seen the movie. We don't know any more than that.
It's a professional sport in America, right?
That's right, yeah. Just like bowling. It's an Olympic sport. Anyway. Olympic bowling. No,
I disbelieve.
and well, you should.
One thing I'm interested in discussing as well is games where death is very likely, like role-playing games. So, like, traditionally, Warhammer Fantasy role-play is seen as a game where you will die. And you spend a fair amount of time generating your character. And you have, unlike Paranoia, you have quite an in-depth character. But you're always pretty fragile. And I was wondering what people thought about that, and like whether this makes for a more exciting or less exciting game.
Well, I'm actually in the middle of a Warhammer Fantasy role-playing campaign at the moment, which entertainingly started as first edition. We're now playing second edition, and apparently we're going to go into third edition for the next part of it.
That's quite the jump.
I know. Yeah. we're playing the same characters, and we've kind of just transitioned them across the two editions currently. I used to play it as a kid, and now I'm sort of playing it again. Yeah, I'd forgotten quite how brutal it was. I mean, I'm playing an academic, of course. I'm sort of scholar turned physician student.
Are you guys there? Hello? Oh, no, they've all died. Hello? I think my internet connection is dying or something. Well, that was horrendous.
Yeah, I lost everyone.
I think it's trying to add Grant, but... What's
happening? It didn't make any noise when it tried to add me.
We might all be back. Hello. Grant, there we go.
Okay, good.
Get ready to rock.
Sorry, cool. Guys. So, Ben, you're in the middle of a...
Skype catastrophe. So I'm actually been playing Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game at the moment. We're sort of playing through the three editions, sort of first, second, and third edition, transitioning our characters across the editions.
Interesting.
I think the GM owns a lot of material and wants to be able to sort of play with it all and try out the different mechanisms. But certainly most of it's been first edition. A little bit more second. I think I prefer second edition, some slightly better mechanics, but both from first and second do have that gritty, you're going to die kind of feel about it at every combat. And given I'm playing an academic, scholarly type physician student, become physician now, I think now, I'm still very, very fleshy and weak and rubbish in combat. So. Now, it does have fate points, which, are, again, a lot of systems have gone in for the fate points. Ruin Quest has them now. It didn't used to. And Savage Worlds pretty much hasn't baked in, which is the please don't kill me. I'm going to spend this point. But they are one-off. They are permanent spends. You don't get them back in Warhammer. And we are currently running very, very low on fate points. So right, I suspect there are some new characters in our future the way it's going, which... It does feel a shame because at the moment we've found some very strange characters. We've got a sort of dwarven, basically brute, and a board who basically is basically playing a Cockney geezer, which is interesting because he's an Australian doing the Cockney accent, and I find that quite odd.
It is weird hearing Australians do English accents. They think they can do it.
It's entertaining anyway, but it's a very strange group, and we've sort of cemented together through some weird adventures, and it will feel a shame if one of us is killed. It's like, well, here's a new guy, he's a rat catcher or something. Why yeah, the right. heck would you hang, 'cause it's got to be a rat catcher, but why the heck would he hang around this group? I can see character death coming, and I can't say it's going to add anything to the game at the moment.
That neatly brings us on to the next issue, I think. About replacement characters, which doesn't really make sense. If someone dies in a TV show or in a book, generally, you know, they're mourned and they're remembered, and their death has impact rather than I'm Eric the Cleric. I think that's something which a lot of games don't really take into account, is the fact that your characters are going to die, but you're going to need to have four characters in this game. And something which solved that quite neatly was the first.
I'm not even sure if we've got a recordable, editable segment of you introducing replacement characters yet.
Let's just say we had some audio problems, so yeah, we couldn't. Thank you. Yeah, but now we're going to talk about Darkson or whatever.
So we do have some audio problems, and I'm not sure I have a lot to say about Darkson more than necessarily you're going to say, Grant. But yeah, the idea of you pre-rolled up your four characters as a character tree. And had a suite of characters. They didn't necessarily have to be directly related, but might have some sort of common thread running through their history. Certainly solved problem in Dark Sun where it was a bit more brutal for a D&D setting, and they definitely felt when I played there was a little bit more death going around. But it was fine because three other characters in your character tree already rolled up and you were quite excited about playing them. And as your main character had leveled up, you've been leveling up a few of these characters as well. And it certainly worked if you only had a little bit of death. Fortunately, if you had quite a lot of death, as our group did, you all end up playing a bunch of level one characters again. And as much as you don't need to roll up a new character when you die, you do still need to roll up a new one to replace the slot in your character tree. So we still were rolling up new characters in the background whilst playing with our current characters because our rate of death was just a bit too high, I think, at that point.
I suppose narratively, it gives you that. It gives you not oh, hi, I'm the new party member, and you guys must be the party. It gives you something. It gives you an established link. So this is my brother. This is the same guy from my sword school. This is the guy who runs the bar we met, etc., etc. And it gives you an established connection which you can draw on, which makes the idea of a replacement character more sensible in narrative terms.
Hmm. What do people think about players taking on NPCs when they die? Is that a good way, sort of, you know, if the NPC is vaguely involved in what's been going on?
We've definitely done that. I think it has worked. It has to be an NPC, of course. They're keen to play and a character they're keen to take over. And often it isn't. Often the NPC has a sudden schizophrenic change into what the player really wanted to play.
Right.
That's a bit jarring.
I think it's important to give the player something to do. And if the option you have is to play, you know, an NPC, then that's fine. There was one game which a friend of mine called Jess used to run called Attack of the Psychotic Killer Undead from Under the Sea, which is a 1950s B movie, basically. It's tonally very strange, but instead of having stats, you have scenes which you can win. So you have win a fight scene or win a scene where you work out what the monsters are weak to, or that sort of thing. And then once you run out of scenes that you can complete successfully, you die and you get a death scene. And then when you die, the first player to die becomes the big bad Baron Von Evil, moustache twirling guy. And then the second player to die becomes his henchman. And then the third player to die becomes his henchman, and then you end up with this cast of NPCs, and so it actually mirrors it quite nicely, actually, because the more players die, the more enemies are introduced. And it gives you kind of a rolling thing where the hero and heroine, the main two characters who always die last or not at all, are outnumbered, and the deaths are meaningful. Like you sort of push towards the death because you get to say, oh, well, I'm going to hold them off. You go ahead alone. You get to have an awesome death. It's a really exciting thing. Rather than, you rolled a 20 and you could have rolled a 19, so now I'm dead. It makes death an interesting thing and acknowledges the fact that this is a game which we're all here to play to have fun, and then lets players keep on playing after they die.
Yeah, most of the games that I've played, usually, like, if the GM was reasonable, you would have a situation where the higher the risks were in, you know, in the context of the game, then the more likelihood, you know, of someone actually dying, which kind of is a good way to increase the tension. But then other games, it's just if you're being really stupid, then death would be a kind of a reward for being going against the grain or doing something really heinously, you know, idiotic. That I'm not sure what the best way to handle things are, you know, really, because I mean, having all these replacement characters and all these, I mean, the game that you just talked about, which I just completely am blanking on, that sounds like a really interesting way to handle it. But in terms of traditional role playing games like D&D, because like when you're talking about Warhammer Fantasy, some D&D games I've played, you know, depending on the GM, have been, you know, even though they're not grim and dark, they're pretty deadly. It almost seems like that's the point of the game, is for the GM to just delight in killing your characters off.
That's why I do it.
Yeah! No, but I just think it's slightly getting away from the point of it. If you just roll up a new character, I guess it's kind of like an MMO where you lose all your stuff and it's a character that's like a Richard Mannix, one of our longtime friends who played particular characters over and over and over for years. You know, it was like an old coat, he said. He was putting on an old coat. And to lose that old coat is quite painful, you know, for someone to actually say, no, that guy is dead. Gone. Is a pretty, strong consequence. Yeah. But
yeah, we had a 3-year campaign of Dragonlance, in the more modern version. And we got to the very, very final fight, and everyone's level 20, and D&D really doesn't scale to about 3.5 edition didn't, and it was a horrendous bucket of dice fest. But it was the big last fight. We had the 4-hour session just for this last fight, because we knew it was going to take ages. It's all these stats, all these things. And turn 2, one of the kind of dark disciple, blah blah blah, evil cleric things throws out one of the many, many death spells from 3.5 edition, which at this point is 20 or nothing's going to happen. And I rolled the 20, and I roll public dice because I find it more scary. And I couldn't take it back. So it's like, so you suddenly disintegrate and disappear. Sure, there's a billion NPCs for this guy to play for the next 3 hours, but it's the final scene of, someone dying in the final scene seems acceptable, almost dramatic. But in the first half hour of game, this is a big final closer campaign, and your character's dead, by the way. That one you've been playing for the last 2 years. And it just felt, worst narrative move ever. But the 20 was on the table. Like, short of knocking over my Coke and grabbing it before anyone could see it, couldn't see any way out of that.
But how often does that happen? And then the GM goes, well, you're partially like maimed, so you're horribly disfigured or something, but you're still there, and he's able to scrabble and grab the wand of Vecna or whatever and able to deal the finishing blow even though he's gonna die, kind of thing. I mean,
I think
Chris, it would have been good.
Most games don't give you rules for that, like Fate does. Yeah.
The spell was disintegrate. Fighting. There was no halfway house on this one, unfortunately.
It disintegrates one of your toes. But the ones you don't need, you don't like so much.
No, I'm sorry, Ben. I'm not trying to criticize, but I've been in games where that's things like that. Similar things have happened, and then the GM's gone, well, no, wait, actually, you're not dead. This has happened. And I don't know if people are okay with that, because you can see everyone looking around the table kind of going, but then
it's strange. I think, like, if the GM neuters the threat of death when it is a proper threat, then everyone else is like, well, true. One, why did they pick that guy to survive? And two, I'm no longer scared of throwing myself into it. This isn't a serious fight because I can't die.
True.
Actually, one thing I'd like to bring up in that respect about things about death being serious is an incredible set of rules called Raising the Stakes. It was written for 3.0, Dungeons and Dragons. And there's two main ideas. One about raising the stakes, so you can get extra benefits in combat if you agree to take on problems if you fail. So I want to knock this orc over, and if I fail, he kicks me in the nuts. Okay, fine. And you can raise up the odds and the stakes for the DM beforehand. But it also gave you something called the Death Flag. And what you do at any point in the fight, you raise the death flag, and that gives you a reroll on your dice, on any dice you want. But then you can die in that fight, and it means mechanically you can say, this fight is so important to me that I'm willing to die. And up to that point, you can get captured, beaten up, dismembered, hurt, whatever, but you'll survive. But then it lets you have the agency of your character and saying, no, this is important enough for me to die, and I'm willing to take on those risks. And I think that's a really big decision as well, to have death as a, not a player choice, but something which is meaningful.
And I think we've said it a number of times throughout the call, in fact, the player having some agency, some kind of responsibility in his death, not just it all being on the GM, sort of keeps coming up as the theme where death seems slightly more acceptable as a mechanism. I had my group recently, Castles and Crusades game, they kept getting beaten up, and they were captured, and then they were all beaten up again. I'm like, well, okay, the creatures would probably leave you alone in this situation. But the third time they all went down in the middle of the sacrificial temple they were part of, where the monster's modus operandi was sacrifice someone to his dark god to awaken him. I'm like, you know what, guys? One of you is getting sacrificed. Whoever wants to pick, they're getting sacrificed. I'll kind of give you an extra, 500 XP to start, or an extra magic weapon of choice. Just, I'll give you a thing if you volunteer your character to die, because I don't want to pick. That would be awful. And yeah, one of the guys said, you know what? I'm not enjoying this character very much. It's not working out. I thought, yeah, go on. I'm the one they pick. So again, just putting the agency back on them. I didn't feel like a bad guy. And again, that's what it's all about. I don't want to feel like a bad person. It's all about me.
No, that's fine. And something like Apocalypse World, the GM is given full ability to screw over the players as much as they want, but only in response to a bad roll from the players. So if the player messes up a roll, the GM makes a hard move, and they say, right, okay, then you're captured. Then you're split apart from each other. Then a convoy of trucks pulls over in the distance. And you're not a bad guy. The rules said you had to introduce something wrong.
Yeah, I think that's why we keep... Sorry, go on.
Okay.
I was going to say that's why we keep coming back to games like Fate, Core, and Apocalypse World, and all these games where they've really thought about, how to handle these, really thorny questions of games. How to keep the fun, but... forget everything else, to put it in Frozen terms.
And I think this is also applied through, briefly to revisit the board gaming world as well. There are very few games now coming out which have player outage that aren't also very short, fun games, like things like King of Tokyo and a couple of others, where it's a kill your opponents, get on with the game, and 20 minutes later we're setting up a new game anyway. So, yeah, it doesn't matter that you got knocked out because the game's probably almost over. So people have actually fought through the problem of older games, of people sitting there, people being out, people having nothing to do, and observe this is bad. This is a bad game if it's got it. We need to solve the problem to make a good game. Yeah.
So I think we're kind of coming up to the end of the podcast, but sort of as a last question, and I should pose this to Grant first, because you've actually designed a few games, but how would you handle, if you were designing your own game, what which of these tactics would you take?
It very much depends on the theme of the game, depends on what sort of mood you want to evoke, but generally what I'm interested in is giving players the choice to die, and giving them the option to make death important and interesting or funny or emotional. But rather than just having it arbitrarily decided by numbers, if a player can say how important this is to them and give them some sort of, give them an enormous spotlight for doing it. So something like the death flag I mentioned earlier, or fate points are good as well. Or like in the game One Last Job I wrote, when you run out of hit points, you can choose to hide your injury, so you die at the end of the next scene, and then it's revealed that you were shot and your jacket was soaking up the blood. Or you can put someone else in danger, so they reduce one of their stats as you force them to go and rescue you. Or you can betray the team, and you can turn up as an evil NPC in the next scene, as it turns out, I was working against you all along. But that gives you, that isn't just you die, that gives you three options, which are all narratively interesting.
And Ben?
Yeah, no, actually, I, having listened through the call, I've really enjoyed the idea, and I can't think of many games I've played that have used it, where the player's death means they get to change and join the other team and become the bad guy. And certainly, I've observed sort of a couple of games, I think I mentioned, where when a player dies, or when a player gets revealed in Shadows of Camelot, and they speed the end of the game up. Again, if it sort of brings that in, puts the player on the side of the bad guys, turns up the pressure, and brings the game to a hopefully more exciting, more dramatic, and quicker conclusion, that means we can get on with playing another game as soon as possible in the case of all games, but still have, an even more exciting ending based around the player being eliminated from the game, rather than making it a bad experience for that player and the game just ticking on at the usual normal pace. which means some guy's going off for a snack while waiting for you guys to finish having fun.
How about you, Will?
I really like the idea of a death flag. I think you might actually, in certain games, get away with, you know, you mentioned, oh, well, anything can happen up to death. But I think, you know, if you could have a dismemberment flag and maybe the partial paralysis flag, or I don't know, like...
It's a very complicated character sheet.
Well, yeah, probably. But, you know, the more sort of extra dice you wanted, the greater the risks would be. That makes sense to me. I think also the key thing to say is actually, you know, it sometimes we've mostly been talking about death when it appears on the dice and stuff like that. But of course, players choose to retire characters as well. And sometimes they choose to retire them by having them die in a dramatic and exciting way. And when that's done in the right way, that can be really cool. That's my favorite.
I once tried for a month to lose a warlord to death and he just wouldn't die. he was not a frontline fighter. He wore cloth armor and I threw him into the front of every single fight. And he just managed to escape, and I was getting really bored of him.
And what about you, John?
Oh, yes, me.
What about you, John?
I think I would probably do what Fate does, you know, obviously give, you know, give, never have it be down to a roll of the dice, you know. I mean, I like narrative games. I like a story. I like to have, you know, characters that make sense and an internal logic of a world that is consistent. And oftentimes dice, although they give you lots of randomness, and if I kind of feel like every game needs to have dice for whatever reason, at the same time they can make some pretty bizarre things happen within the context of a story. And if you take some of those elements like death and make them, you know, as Fate does, or, you know, in other some of the other games we've mentioned, you know, more of an act of player agency or player choice, or have the player be involved in that decision somewhat, then that's probably the best way to handle it. I tend to, in as you guys have played with me know, I tend to err on the side of being too kind, I think, and not making it a meaningful consequence as much as it should be. But then that's because I tend to think of stories not so much along the lines of George R. R. Martin, you know, where it's death is surprising and really unfortunate and realistically, you know, unusual and sad and, you know, bizarre and, you know, upsetting, you know. So, and death should be upsetting. It's something that, you know, happens in our world every day. And In the worlds that we conjure up, it should have some kind of presence. So, but as we've kind of determined, I think it's best when at least the person who is dying has some kind of say over what's happening. Because if it's just a punishment or a consequence, that's not what we should. That's not what it should be. So I don't think that's very satisfying for anyone. So, so what do you guys think for next time? We'll probably sign off in a minute, but
I think we should talk about the games which are the most fun, like the like stupid, balls out fun.
Yes, which I can't.
Tears streaming down face, kind of. Yeah.
Laugh out loud. Like
sounds good.
Fanta spraying out your nose, that sort of thing. I'm assuming you were drinking Fanta beforehand, like it doesn't make sense if you were just. That's not a thing. You're doing,
or that would be quite a.
That would be very funny.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So hopefully everyone, you can join us next time for the Tabletop Podcast. Again, I'm John Jones, at John Solo on Twitter, and Ben is...
I am Phantom Whale on Twitter.
And Will...
At Dark Wedge.
At Dark Wedge. And definitely check out Grant's games. What's your...
Yes,
what's the best
website,
way to...
my Twitter is GSHOWITT, GS Howitt. And my website is lookrobot.co.uk. It's linked to my games on there. My games are all free. Have a look. They're fun. You might like them.
Yeah, definitely.
They are, absolutely. We're going to talk about fun. I'm going to talk about your games, I think, Grant.
Absolutely.
Just to cheat you out of any possible topic you might have. Because I'm cruel. And that's how I get my fun.
Good. All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. And see you next time.